No one has ever actually been able to come up with a working definition of what this dignity is and where it comes from. But for people of faith, it's easy. They get it that our inherent dignity comes from the fact that we are created in the image of God.
We live in an interconnected world where the questions are complex, and so we have Babel Undone. And it exists to have a conversation about issues of interest to all of us, or maybe things that make you a little curious. I'm Johnny Moore, an American evangelical leader who serves as the president of the Congress of Christian Leaders. And I want to welcome you to Premier Christian Radio's Babel Undone podcast featuring Archbishop Joseph D'Souza. Today, Bishop, we're going to talk to a truly, truly amazing person, and the subject is faith as an antidote to cultural nihilism.
It's a great, great title and topic. Ever since the fall of man at the beginning of time, it's been difficult for people to buy into an overarching meta-narrative about reality, truth, and value. When the common good ceases to be a priority, when family goes on the back burner, and when personal ambition becomes a priority, we always witness a rise in radical individualism and the selfishness inherent in human nature. We are then left with something of a narrative vacuum that leaves many feeling empty and purposeless. But I wonder, could faith be what solves this problem? Today's guest is going to help us answer that question.
Yeah, Dr. Katrina Lantos-Sweat serves as the president of the Lantos Foundation for Human Rights and Justice. It was established in 2008 to continue the legacy of her father, a truly iconic figure in the United States, the late Congressman Tom Lantos, who was the only Holocaust survivor ever elected to the U.S. Congress. Dr. Lantos-Sweat is the former chair and vice chair of the U.S. Commission for International Religious Freedom. She teaches human rights and American foreign policy at Tufts University. She also serves on the advisory board of UN Watch, the annual Anne Frank Award and Lecture, and the Warren B. Rudman Center for Justice, Leadership, and Public Policy. She's a friend. She's someone I admire a great, great deal, and we're so honored to have her here today. Katrina, we have interviewed more guests than I can remember at this point, and virtually every single conversation, we like to begin with the same question, and you can answer it however you want. It's a very, very simple question. You can be as thoughtful, you know, metaphysical or as practical, like, you know, it doesn't matter to us. And here's the question: who is Katrina Lantos-Sweat?
Oh, it's a wonderful question because we all wear so many, not even hats, you know, it's much deeper than that. There are so many identities that live within us. I would say, to keep it brief, the quick answer to that is that I am the proud daughter of two Hungarian Holocaust survivors. And that identity is very, very deeply embedded, sort of in every fiber of my being. I think when you come from that sort of a heritage, you feel, in some sense, that you are another link in a very noble chain that extends back millennia, and you feel a sense of duty about that. So that is a very, very important part of who Katrina Lantos Sweat is. And my dad, Tom Lantos, was and will, because of the nature of Father Time, remain the only Holocaust survivor ever elected to serve in the United States Congress. Now, I'm also a devout believer in Jesus Christ, and I'm very grateful that for me, in my understanding of both my heritage and my understanding of truth, there is no contradiction between those two identities. And then I'm also the very fortunate wife of a wonderful man, my husband, Richard Sweat, former member of Congress, former ambassador to Denmark. We are the proud parents of seven children and now 16 grandchildren, but number 17 is already en route.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting and a little shocking, but in an exciting way. And then professionally, I'm an attorney by training. I Also, am a professor. I've taught human rights and American foreign policy. I've also taught international religious freedom as an academic discipline at Tufts University. I am a past chair of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom and vice chair. And for now, gosh, I guess the past 5 going on 6 years, I've been very honored to be a partner with Ambassador Sam Brownback as the co-chair of the annual International Religious Freedom Summit in DC. So there's some of who I am.
It's wonderful.
I'm just wondering, Bishop, and like what the secret is to remembering the names of 16, soon 17 grandchildren. I guess teaching in a university helps you as a start, but
It is helpful. I started a tradition with our first grandson, and now I'm really regretting it. And that is, I write a song for each new grandchild. Usually, I take an existing like show tune from, I don't know, My Fair Lady or South Pacific or something, and I rewrite the lyrics about that child. And it was really fun for the first 5. Now it's sort of like the pressure is there, and I'm sort of
they keep
fretting
and
where
they
not to.
keep coming, right?
They do keep coming, but I have some talented children, so I think I'm going to start drawing in some collaborators.
Katrina, from our side and from those of us who are outside of the US and me in India, just for you to be encouraged, the Lantos Commission in Congress has been a tremendous encouragement to us. And, it became the first commission to ever have a hearing on Cong in Congress in Congress's history on the issue of the Dalits, the low caste, the outcast. And I can't believe, myself and many others have come and testified there. So the commission, which is done in memory of your father, took the first step, and now it is on in historical records, in your congressional records. So you're blessed because you got a great, great legacy. You are very interested in the issue of faith serving as an antidote to cultural nihilism. What do you mean when you talk about nihilism, and why do you think we're seeing it more and more today in society? And why is it appealing to such a wide group of people?
Well, thank you for your kind words about my father's legacy, and that means a lot. So I thank you for that. Yeah, I've recently this idea that there is this outlook of nihilism that has taken hold in certain segments of our society sort of began to coalesce for me in recent months. We've had sort of event after event after event that have shocked certainly the conscience of the world, but have brought home to me very vividly this disintegration and emptiness, especially in a lot of young people. So we think, of course, about the recent assassination of Charlie Kirk. I think about the murder of a number of young kids in a Catholic church during Mass. I think about the murder of a beautiful young couple. Both staffers at the Israeli embassy, recently engaged, planning to be married, one Christian, one Jewish, murdered as they left an event there. We think about a Ukrainian refugee, a beautiful young Ukrainian woman who fled to the United States from war-torn Ukraine and in a completely, utterly random attack, stabbed to death on a train. A Latter-day Saint church recently burned and people shot there. I could go on. They have caused me to think about the fact that there has been such a severing of the moral and cultural and social sort of ties that kept people from just going into very dark, empty, meaningless places. And so I've sort of been using the phrase nihilism. It's, of course, a philosophy, sometimes broken into cultural nihilism and moral nihilism. I'm sorry, as existential nihilism and moral nihilism. Moral nihilism There's no such thing as objective right and wrong. Existential nihilism, life itself has absolutely no inherent value, purpose, meaning. And the causes, I think, are many. And I'm sure there are people a lot smarter and more serious as scholars than I am looking at some of these causes. But I think social media is part of it. I think something that we have seen over many decades, the weakening of faith, all faiths, but commitment to faith communities growing, the rising number of so-called nones, NONESs. And my focus tends to be culturally on what's happening in the United States. Many such trends. And then just the breakdown of morality. So morality doesn't always have to stem from religion and faith, but in a quick and easy way, we tend to associate morality with certain religious boundaries, that are set. And people are willing to live within those boundaries because they aren't just a social convention, but they put some added strength behind them because they are coming from a higher power. Don't do this, do this, obligation. So I think all of those things have come together, but I think it's an incredibly dangerous and worrisome and disquieting development for society. I know so many people in whom I see a deep underlying disquiet, even if their lives haven't fallen apart, even if somehow they're going along. You see it and you sense it. I think of that line, and I don't know who the poet or the writer was, but I'm sure you've heard it. Most men live lives of quiet desperation. It's a famous phrase in American literature.
Henry Thoreau.
Well, thank you. As I said, I rely on smarter, more serious people than myself to pull in a whole
That I
bunch
don't
of
qualify
facts.
with you, Katrina.
Oh, yes, you do. Yes, you do, Reverend. So yeah, those are, I think, what I see as some of the causes and what the effects are. But I think, well, may I say one more thing, and forgive me if I'm talking too long, but I work in the field of human rights, and this whole empty feeling of nihilism is in such profound contradiction to the underlying concept behind the whole architecture of human rights, and that is this belief that every single human being has an inherent inalienable dignity. And it's such a powerful concept because, in a way, the evidence contradicts it. You know what I mean? I can point to a whole lot of people who are anything but what we would call dignified, their behavior, their speech, their attitudes, even the way they clean or don't clean their house. The word dignity might not be the first thing that comes to your mind. And yet, the Universal Declaration asserts that we all have this inherent dignity, and it's from that our fundamental rights flow. And what's to me fascinating is all the brilliant minds that wrote the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and all the brilliant minds that have analyzed it and written about it since, no one has ever actually been able to come up with a working definition of what this dignity is and where it comes from. But for people of faith, it's easy. For people of faith, they get it that our inherent dignity comes from the fact that we are created in the image of God. The minute you assert that, and if you believe it, suddenly you say, well, yes, that imprint, that divine imprint on every human being, no matter how despicable their conduct may be, no matter how lousy they may be as a person, they bear an inherent dignity because of their parents, if you will.
It's such a good point, because then you can't just go kill somebody because you disagree with them, right? I mean, this is why we have systems of law and justice to deal with people that make that commit these, crimes or injustices, and incursions, or, human rights abuses, or these sorts of things. And I have to tell you, this has been a shock to my system the last couple of months. I mean, because I did know Charlie Kirk. I did know I knew one of the Israeli diplomats that was killed. Another one followed my work. Like, to step back and to think, like, at what point in American history, like rarely in American history, I mean, certainly in the civil rights movement, there were, several of these moments, but I did not expect in 2025 to be able to say, like, oh yeah, I knew a couple of people that were assassinated in the United States of America because of what they believe. Like, I know those people. Like, this is crazy. And it's hugely, hugely alarming. And I think you've put the hammer on the nail, that there is this, like,
Nihilism.
it's a cultural crisis. It's a theological crisis. It's a democratic crisis. And I think, Katrina, like, this type of nihilism is particularly destructive in a democracy. Am I right about that from your point of view?
Oh, I think you are absolutely right. Democracy, relies more than any other system of government on, what, our founding fathers said it was only designed for a moral people, but we could also say for a people who cherished certain very beautiful and idealistic notions, which are absolutely in the DNA of America's founding. And, I will hurry to answer because I don't ever want people to think any of us overlook all the sins and flaws and shortcomings at the beginning of this great experiment that was the United States of America. And clearly, slavery is the overpowering one. But even acknowledging that the idea of a country based on ideas of equality and liberty and the right to pursue happiness and the rule of law and free speech and free exercise of religion. This was unique in history. All other nations were founded on, blood or soil or cross, star or crescent. There was a different sort of basis for creating that national identity. And really, the United States was very, very unique in that regard. And that's why I think a certain hopefulness, a spirit of belief that we can form a more perfect union, a spirit of belief that we can, generation upon generation, approach those ideals more fully. My late father used to refer to what he called the hypocrisy gap. And he said the hypocrisy gap is an undeniable gap that has existed in our history between our beautiful and stirring ideals and the reality on the ground. But what has made America so wonderful is that each generation, and this is true in other countries as well, and I apologize to your international audience. I speak from my experience, but I think a similar analysis would apply elsewhere, that when you have a democracy in which people retain their basically very idealistic notions about building a better and a better and a better society, then generation by generation, the hypocrisy gap that afflicts all countries can be closed. And we have closed it in remarkable ways, I think, in America. So I think that's why to get back to your excellent question, that's why I think this spirit of rejection, of tearing things down, of meaninglessness, all of these things are very dangerous in a democracy because a democracy requires a hopeful, positive, engaged citizenry.
And Katrina, you state that faith is the best antidote for this kind of nihilism. Can you elaborate on that? Most people would think have come up with other solutions. Why do you feel that faith is really crucial to combat this idea of nihilism and maybe this climate of nihilism?
Yes, well, I firmly believe that, in part because of what I spoke about earlier, that most faiths teach a narrative about who we are as individuals that do imbue our lives with meaning, with purpose. We are not just a random, assortment of atoms thrown together in a random way, no purpose, no meaning to the lives we are living here. Most faiths, certainly within the Judeo-Christian tradition, it is very much the case that our lives are viewed as a purposeful journey somewhere, that what we do in this life matters and that we matter. One of the things that I think, again, is very powerful about the Judeo-Christian tradition is, and sometimes it boggles my mind, but I believe it to be true, and that is that both of those traditions believe in a personal God, not just a cosmic spirit of virtue or oneness or something in the world, but an actual personal God who cares and is engaged with and is sometimes frequently bothered by what we do and can approve or disapprove of what we individually do. So I think, and faith is, it also provides an incredible framework for life. I recently came across a quote that I love from the late Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who was the chief rabbi of Great Britain. And he said, I hope I get it correctly, he said, science takes things apart to understand how they work, but religion puts things to un together to understand what they mean. And we people need to know what life means. That's the antidote, that's the antithesis of nihilism, that we know what life means. And I'd like to mention, if I may here, I recently was asked to join an initiative, which I think is wonderful. It's the Faith and Media Initiative. And it's they have sort of a group of fellows looking at and talking about the ways in which media, social media, movies, TV, books, everything, have tended to interact with the vast world of faith. And my experience has been that, for the most part, again, especially in the context that I'm familiar with, if you saw a movie, the religious person was either a bigot or a hypocrite or a racist. There were a few categories, or they were so limited and kind of foolish that they were just being bamboozled by others. When one would talk about religious freedom, usually, media, it's always in scare quotes, like we have, there's something scary about this idea. And I could give many, many examples. And it's interesting because one of the fellows in this Faith and Media Initiative fellowship that I'm part of is a very successful guy from Hollywood. And he did a fascinating presentation for us, which you would find very interesting, Johnny, in which he showed, Hollywood is actually kind of missing the boat. And he showed how this series of films, some very explicitly faith-based, others, more just telling an interesting story in which faith was an element being told fairly and represented fairly, have done extraordinarily well at the box office. People actually want to see good stories well told. And I think the well told is important. You can't, none of us like for entertainment to see propaganda. Propaganda is different, and religious propaganda isn't all that appealing either. These stories need to be complex. They need to be, honest, engaging. But at the end of the day, there is, I think, a real hunger out there, and I think this is one little piece of the solution, for a media landscape where people can find stories that will cause them to think, to ponder, may leave them feeling uplifted. That's not such a terrible thing to walk out of a movie theater or turn off your TV screen and feel a certain sense of either inspiration or uplift or motivation or admiration or tears because you're moved by something that was portrayed. And I think it also just needs to be said that, and many people feel, I don't know if it preceded this, but the assassination of of Charlie Kirk does seem to have sparked a remarkable interest in the young generation, which is exciting to me to think about questions of faith, because here was a whip smart guy who was very much up to his shoulders in the political arena, and yet he was also quite unafraid, in fact, very bold about asserting his faith and what it was that motivated him and what it was that he prioritized. And I don't think people need to share his Christian faith, but I think a lot of young people want that. They want that in their lives, and they're starting to look for it.
I think that's the perfect way to finish the conversation, because that is the good news about the bad news for sure. Because I think we're all witnessing in our country and around the world this sort of resurgent nihilism, and people are empty and they're looking, and some people are taking drastic life-altering decisions because of it. But then, as history has often done, we have some surprises, and some of the surprises are a type of seeking that's taking place all around the world. Sometimes prompted by tragedies, a lot of it sort of post-pandemic, AI bringing in a whole different vector of that discussion. And I think you've given us some really, really powerful ways to think about it all. And as I think everyone always is, we've been blessed to hear your perspectives, Katrina. Thanks for joining us today on Babel Undone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. What a pleasure and honor and privilege to be with you. And thank you for the important work you're doing. And it was lovely to be with you. Thank you so
Thank
much.
you. Well, I'll tell you, Bishop, as they say, that apple doesn't fall far from that tree. I mean, her father was an icon, and she's
No less.
every no less, every bit as brilliant, and gave us lots and lots of interesting things to think
And
about.
it's good she's brought the attention to the widespread nihilism that's going around our world and in many nations of the world, where the young people, without any question, feel life is hopeless. There's nothing to it. And many different things have triggered it. The failure of the political systems, the failure of religions. I'm not saying the failure of faith, the failure of religions, and the mess. I mean, I actually lay some of the blame at the door of the media, which has portrayed and advertised that life is hopeless. And I'm sorry, the academia. They have done a fantastic job, the left liberal guys, of tearing down any sort of meaning in life.
I think you're absolutely right, Bishop. And my only concern about all of this is that it is gravely, gravely serious with huge implications, and people aren't paying enough attention to it. And I hope one of the things that comes from this conversation we just had is that it awakens some sleeping people to do their part in stemming this tide. We need a world where people know why they're here and not looking
If you haven't
in
already, please consider
darkening
subscribing
corners
so
of
you always
emptiness.
have our most current episodes ready to go. And also, if you wouldn't mind, please take a few seconds to leave a review on Premiere Plus or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. It helps us to hear your feedback and it helps others find us more easily too. And lastly, if you'd like to support the ministry of Babel Undone, you can find a link at the bottom of the show notes where you can support the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us today for Babel Undone. If this conversation had you thinking, then why don't you share it with someone else? For more episodes of Babel Undone or other amazing content that helps Christians live out their faith, you should head over to premier.plus. That's Premier, Premier, for the Americans listening in, dot plus.